RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Foy. It is Thanksgiving Eve, November 25th, 2020. We're here to talk about the latest going on in the world of mixed martial arts. We got a ton of headlines to talk about here on this edition of the podcast. Also, we will get you ready for Saturday's UFC Vegas number 15 card. It'll be headlined by Curtis Blaydes taking on Derek Lewis. Co-main event is Anthony Smith versus Devin Clark. Daniel, first off, happy early Thanksgiving to you. Number one Thanksgiving dish for you. I'm a pumpkin pie kind of guy.
That's not a bad choice, Jason. That's not a bad choice. Look, I'll tell you what it's not. It's not turkey, okay? Turkey absolutely sucks. I just want to put this out there. Between all the meats in the world, turkey is low on the list. It doesn't crack the top 15 of any rankings. And I just want to put it out there that both turkey and, honestly, ham are kind of disappointing. It boggles my mind that we don't do Thanksgiving and it's not like chicken wings or beef, but that's beside the point. My number one Thanksgiving dish has to be, I don't know how common this is amongst people, but my aunt makes the best macaroni. It's like breaded macaroni, and it is absolutely a delight. I don't think we're going to gather this year, unfortunately, so I don't think I'm going to partake in the macaroni. I think it's going to be a Zoom Thanksgiving. But I must say, Jason, macaroni and cheese is my favorite Thanksgiving dish.
My family really doesn't do mac and cheese for Thanksgiving, but yeah, I'm a big mac and cheese guy. But yeah, it's obviously it's a different Thanksgiving for all of us this year. So hopefully you are being safe out there. And if you are, you know, heading over to your families, have some good food there on Thursday. But Daniel, a ton of things going on in the world of mixed martial arts, several headlines that we can talk about, whether it's Anderson Silva, man, AJ McKee, what a performance he had last Thursday night at Bellator 253 with that submission he got over Darren Caldwell. Davison Figueiredo defends his title, and he's going to return in 21 days now, you know, between fights, as he's going to be challenged by Bram Moreno there at UFC 256. Valentin Shevchenko kind of, you know, Dana White mentioning that Jessica Andrade is who he wants to face next. And obviously, I broke a little bit of news there on Thursday night, Bellator 253. So where you want to start, man?
Let's talk about the Henry Hoof situation. I listened to your interview with Mike Mazzulli, and it just boggles my mind, the whole situation with Henry Hoof, Jason Jackson's corners breaking protocol. And again, if someone listening hasn't listened to Jason's interview with Mike Mazzulli, I think you should check it out. It's on the MMA Report podcast feed. But why don't you kind of set up the table? Because out of all those things, this one is the juiciest piece of turkey we have on our hypothetical table here.
I have heard some crazy things covering the sport since 2009. There are things you hear that you're just like, you can't believe it. You're like, and so when I learned about this, and to me, the part that it just boggles my mind is that the reason the commission learned that Greg Jones and Henry Hoof violated the COVID protocols, which, by the way, are not just set by the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations, they are also set by Bellator/Viacom Legal, is the fact that they told on themselves by posting on social media. Like, if I am Jason Jackson, I am looking at both of his coaches and going, dude, can you guys not stay off social media?
Yeah. And it's crazy because it's not like they're being tortured over there when they do an event. It's pretty simple. I mean, the process is simple. What happened here is you go there, you get your test, and you quarantine, right? It's a short 24-hour period, maybe a little longer. But Greg Jones got tested, didn't quarantine until the result. Henry Hoof didn't get tested. And they're both going to Jason's room and breaking protocol. And it's just like, this isn't the first day of COVID protocol. We've been doing this for months. Bellator's been running for months. And it's just, it's got to be infuriating if you're Viacom, if you're Mike Mazzulli, because you're trying to established protocols, when you have someone blatantly disregard them, it's tough, and it puts Jason in a bad position. I mean, Muzzulli brought it up. Had one of the corners tested positive, that fight is off. And think about the opportunity that would have been taken away from Jason Jackson. I mean, it was the biggest fight he's been in, and he goes out there and he beats Benson Henderson. That fight doesn't happen if one of his cornermen tests positive, because they broke protocol. They shared a room with him. So, yeah, it's crazy. It's insane. The idea that he posted on social media, like you said, absolutely takes the cake. I mean, it's like a criminal committing a crime and bragging about it on their Twitter feed. It makes no sense.
That to me is a part, like, you sit there and tell me that a fighter slash corner man violated COVID protocols. That doesn't shock me. Like that does not shock me at all. But the fact of you sit there and telling yourself now that one, I was reading this story on ESPN.com, and they had a statement from Henry Hoof about this. And he says, quote, "I don't know what this is about. I am 41-0 in COVID tests, and whatever they're doing, it's so weird. We will talk to my partners at Sanford MMA to see what's going on." First off, just because you're 41-0 taking COVID tests doesn't mean test 42 is not going to be positive. And the fact is, and I you know, over the period of these Bellator events, it's been kind of made widely known to me. The fact is, Bellator lets everyone know exactly what these protocols are, what you are expected to do while being in the bubble there at Bellator. And I think one of the things that you have to credit Bellator in on this is the fact of that when, you know, the fighter and their seconds get, and for those who don't understand what that is, seconds is AKA what most people call cornermen. They all have their own hotel room to quarantine in. So it's not like all three of them are bunked up in the same hotel room. So I think part you have to give Bellator a lot of credit for that, because there is an expense to that. And obviously Bellator has spent a lot of money to put on these shows at the Mohegan Sun and to continue giving all their fighters fights, you know. And so I think that it's also like, I, you know, and we'll see whether Nevada honors the suspension, because really that's what really comes down to it. And if they do honor the suspension, you know, Henry Hoof and Greg Jones will not be able to corner Kamaru Usman if his fight in February does take place. I mean, that's a big part of it. You know, whether Nevada honors that suspension, I don't know if they will or not. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But the fact is, it put Mike Muzzulli, it backed him into a corner, because the fact of he knew this happened, he had to do something. He just couldn't let this slide. So, you know, unfortunately for Henry Hoof and Greg Jones, they were the people that were made example of.
Yeah. Well, it's not unfortunate for them, because, I mean, they did it to themselves here. And the one thing that gives me trepidation is, like, maybe Henry didn't know, which is insane to me. It's an insane idea that he doesn't know. The only reason why I say he didn't know the protocol is because he was dumb enough to put it on social media. It's like, why would you know you're breaking the rules and then brag about it on social? I know he wasn't bragging about it, right? He was just posting that he was training. And you know, Mike Muzzulli said on your podcast, like, his son saw it, which is like, man, his son's a hardcore MMA observer. Like, that's a... That kid is following everyone. Because when I heard that, I actually spit out water. I was like, what the heck? This kid is on it. I am not going to have him add me on social media, because I don't want him, you know, telling his dad. But I when I heard that, I thought that was amazing. But so on one hand, logically, it's like, why would you, if you know you're breaking protocol, in more ways than one, by the way, because you have that along with using the room as a training center, which is something Mike said on your podcast that I didn't really get. Like, he said that you can't use the room as a training center. I wonder if that's just a Mohegan Sun thing, like, in general. Is that a thing that you can't be using the room there? Or is that a COVID thing?
So what Bellator has done is that they have set up the Mohegan Sun Arena. They've got certain points where every fighter knows this is your area to train at. So trying to do it safely. So that's what he's talking about there.
Okay. So there's a COVID thing. That made sense. When he said that made sense. I also just didn't know if there was like in 2011, if Roy Nelson was at the Mohegan Sun and he was training his overhand rights and and he blasted the wall, and so they just put that. Okay, that makes sense. So he said those things, and I was like, okay, well, I and also Mike also said there's no way he didn't know. Basically, that's basically what he said on your podcast. There's no way Henry didn't know. So on one hand, the idea that he put on social media makes me think he didn't know. On the other hand, everything else leads me to believe he would have known the protocols. And his comments are baffling. His comments are a way of deflecting, where he doesn't really combat the issue. He's just like, I'm 41-0 against these tests. And it's such a moronic way of looking at coronavirus. As well as him saying what Bellator is doing is strange, which is not strange at all. It's not a strange protocol to have guys literally take a test in quarantine and wait until they get that result back. That's literally norm for any sports organization, UFC, NBA, etc. So I just frankly don't know what Henry's talking about. I just think he made a major mistake. Him and Greg Jones did. Jason did as well. Jason obviously listened to the podcast you did. He took way more ownership over it. And obviously he got fined. He can use that to maybe not pay his cornermen as much. So I just think Henry's not taking responsibility for it. And all I can say is, you know, this is a guy who's really well respected, and he'll continue to be a hell of a coach. I just wish he would have taken responsibility. And I hope the athletic commissions honor this suspension, because this is a serious deal here. The COVID, the coronavirus pandemic. And we are nearing the end. I hope to God we are. It seems like we are. We got vaccines on the way. We got 3 approved vaccines. We got, you know, things getting ready to be deployed in December and open to the general public in April. Right? We see the light at the end of the tunnel. This disease, this virus is nasty. And to belittle it absolutely spits in the face of everything we're trying to do as a general society.
The unfortunate thing about this story, Daniel, is the fact of it became the number one story following Bellator 253, when the number one story of Bellator 253 should have been AJ McKee. Boy, I did not see that one coming.
No, I don't think Darian Caldwell did either, man. I mean, that whole Bellator card is really uplifting and exciting, because you had a lot of solid prospect guys moving forward. But AJ was the one with a cherry taking the cake, right? Where he gets taken down, and it was really a unique neck crank. I honestly can't think about me seeing that submission very often at all, really. Like, especially at a high level where, you know, obviously you see guillotine chokes every time, but that was not that. This was like an intriguing neck crank counter where Caldwell is in the top position and McKee secures him. And it was just you talk about career defining wins. That's the career defining win for AJ McKee. 17 wins now. This was supposed to be a close barn burner to decide the man advancing to the finals. And McKee took care of business in that first round. Obviously Caldwell brought the fight to the ground, but my general takeaway is that, you know, the prospect label is off for AJ McKee, because he fought like a veteran. He was calm, he was cool and collected, and when he was put on his back, he had a large inventory of submission knowledge to go to, and he saw the position he was given, and he was able to extract one of the things he learned years ago, and he was able to lock on that neck crank and tap out a former Bellator champion, one of the top contenders in this tournament. So overall, my thought is AJ McKee, his time is now. He's no longer a prospect, no longer a rookie. He's now a fight veteran. And his next fight is going to let us know what the next 5 years of AJ McKee is going to look like. The upside is huge, Jason. Let's say Patricio beats Emmanuel Sanchez. I mean, I hate to say that, because, like, you know, the fight's got to happen, but poor Emmanuel, I think that's what we're all thinking. If AJ beats Patricio Pitbull, McKee is now on a track to be considered one of the best fighters on the planet. He's not there yet, and he wouldn't be there yet with the Patricio win, but that's the type of deal AJ exudes. This guy's ceiling, you can't see it. So he's the type of guy that responded well when he was dealt with adversity and he tapped out Caldwell. So you're right. The number one storyline, even though the controversy is with Hooft and Jones, damn, AJ McKee, he's here.
Yeah, I tweeted about after the fight was over. I think I can speak for a lot of people that the fight we all want to see in Bellator is Patricio Pitbull versus AJ McKee. I don't know if there's a better fight Bellator can put on right now.
No, I mean, straight up, that's the most interesting fight in Bellator history, right? Like, before that, it was Musashi Lima, which that fight sucked. And before that, it was Alvarez Chandler, which that fight was dope as hell. So I think McKee, Patricio Pitbull, moving forward, I mean, that's the biggest fight in Bellator history. It's not going to do the biggest rating, right? Neither guy's a star. But if you're a mixed martial arts fan, you love that fight because on one hand, you have Patricio Pitbull, who probably is the best fighter in Bellator history, versus AJ McKee, a guy who, when you look at his performances, makes you think, damn, this guy could be the next GOAT in Bellator. So I'm so hyped. And meanwhile, poor Emmanuel's just in the background saying, hey, buddy, I'm going to be the one in that finals. But Emmanuel, if you are, Scott Coker's going to be sad as hell. I'm sorry.
No, you're right on. You know everyone in Bellator is hoping Patricio wins that fight. I mean, look, I mean, Sanchez-Pitbull is a great fight as well. But, man, that's the fight that you want to see there. You know, also last weekend we had UFC 255, Deiveson Figueiredo, you know, rolls through Alex Perez. And now he's going to turn around 21 days between fights to defend his title now against Bram Moreno, who got the win there against Brandon Royval. And that video where you see Mark Montoya put Royval's shoulder back in place is like, oh man, that's great performance that Bram Royval had there. Let me ask you this. Aren't you kind of scared about Deiveson Figueiredo being able to make weight two times in 21 days?
That's so hard, dude. I mean, I am concerned. It's possible. I don't even think we can get mad at him, right? Like, he took the fight on short notice. But yeah, I mean, that's going to be the primary focus for Deiveson is just making weight, and that opens up an opportunity for Brandon Moreno. I mean, we could be talking about Brandon Moreno as the next flyweight champion. I think that's a damn good fight. I mean, look, Deiveson looked unbelievable against Alex Perez. It was a quick victory. He was smart. He was put in a position where it wasn't the position that he wanted, but he rebounded and responded with a very quick submission, kind of similar to AJ's performance. And it was just a clear-cut win for Deiveson. And it was just like, this guy's probably going to be a champion for a very long time. So I think anyone who watched it thought that Deiveson's a star. The problem is not that many people watched it. And this is kind of the way that he can make his star rise, this whole short-notice champion replacement. I love it. I think more people are going to be familiar with his work. And I think taking the Moreno fight is great for his star power. I thought Brandon looked good. I think he was on his way to winning that fight anyway. It's unfortunate that the shoulder came out for Royval. You are right. That was such a dope clip. I was listening to the co-main event podcast, and they were talking about how as an MMA coach, you have to know so many things, and one of them is popping in joints, which is just crazy. Like, it's just like, yeah, what'd you do, honey, today at work? Well, we did some training. I popped in four shoulders. Like, you gotta know so much stuff. And Mark Montoya is a badass for doing that. But look, I think Figueiredo making weight is absolutely the big story, and that's going to deplete some of him, and that's going to open up an opportunity for Brandon Moreno, who could be the next flyweight champion. I think the other thing is I think, unfortunately, Figueiredo is going to be a part of super fight discussions, because I think making 135 probably sounds a lot more appetizing than making 125 for old Deiveson. But this is a division that was nearly, it was like old Yeller. I mean, we were getting ready to put poor Joseph Benavidez behind the woodshed and go all old Yeller on his ass. But now this flyweight division is living, right? We have a Moreno fight. We have a Cody Garbrandt fight on the horizon. I mean, Deiveson Figueiredo has brought life back to this division.
So I did not watch UFC 255 live, and apparently I made a good choice, because I guess apparently the card didn't end until like 1:30 Eastern time on Saturday night. But, you know, so Sunday morning I go on Twitter, and this is never a good thing when you don't watch the fights, and then you go on Twitter the next day, and literally the first tweet I see, you know, like, you know, Twitter has that, you know, things you missed, however they label it. And it was, I want to say it was a MMA fighting tweet, where Deiveson Figueiredo is campaigning for a $50,000 bonus. And right when I saw it, my mind was like, okay, well, I guess this will be a topic on the podcast on Wednesday. But my other thought was like, man, it's not a good look when you're main eventer of a pay-per-view a champion that, you know, everyone now is having a debate on what would a Davison Figueiredo, Demetrius Johnson or Henry Cejudo fight look like. But it's just not a good look when you got a champion up there asking for a $50,000 bonus.
Yeah, it really isn't. It makes you look minor league, right? It makes sense for anyone who's not a champion. It makes sense for a preliminary fighter to be like, hey, Dana, I want my bonus. I mean, Sasha Poliznikov and Luis Koski, those guys opened up the fight card. They didn't need to do no talking. I mean, they went out there, they put on a barn burner, and they won fight of the night. If anyone has not seen that fight, they need to. But for the champion, the guy with the strap around his waist, the guy who the fans at home think drives a beautiful car with a golden watch and doesn't have a financial concern in the world, for them to be concerned about the performance of the night bonus is a bit of a bad look. I mean, that along with the fact that that's the first thing you saw is a bit of a bad look. I mean, it speaks to the fact that there wasn't a lot of intriguing stuff coming out of the event. There were plenty of fine fights, but it was a bit of a lame duck event, right? Like, I think the peak was probably that Buckley-Moreno combination, Shevchenko combination. The peak was the first fight. That was dope as hell. But yeah, the main card was pretty lackluster. I mean, I think that's just kind of what's going to happen there. Because Valentina Shevchenko, I mean, she's a female GOAT, one of the best female fighters of all time. But the fight against Jennifer Maia was just boring. And there's just, like, watching that fight, there's nothing you can sink your teeth into as a fight fan. You can't watch that fight and be like, bro, I got some hardcore Valentina Shevchenko opinions. You just don't have any. She just beat Maia. She lost one round, and that was it.
Yeah, you know, after the fight card was over, Dana White mentioned that he wants to see Jessica Andrade. Of course, you know, she's now in this division, and I'm sure that's probably angered Lauren Murphy a little bit, who's won now four in a row. I mean, I guess I understand where Lauren Murphy's coming from, but I just think as a UFC consumer and someone that puts down his, I think it's like $74 after taxes when I order a UFC pay-per-view on ESPN Plus. Like, to me, I'd rather see Jessica Andrade get the title shot next than Lauren Murphy, just because of, I just think, you know, Andrade Shevchenko would be a fun fight to watch.
Remember when you had to win like seven fights in a row to get a title shot in the UFC? I mean, these people win in three fights in a row and they're like entitled to a championship opportunity. It's like, Diego had to beat a lot of people to fight BJ Penn, okay? Ken Flo had to beat a lot of people in a row to fight BJ Penn. And I think you put it down simple. Look, Valentina has made flyweight division boring as hell because she's damn good. And every fight that's proposed sounds boring as hell because she's going to isolate them, she's going to beat them up, she's going to outpoint them, and she's going to get the win. The Jessica Andrade fight has a little bit of a spark to it. And it primarily is because of how damn good she looks when she has it on. When she has it on, Andrade looks like a world beater. She's flirted with being, she's been atop of the pecking order in a different division. And I think Andrade, her fight style, her performances, simply put, Andrade versus Shevchenko is a lot more interesting to me than Murphy versus Shevchenko. I think Murphy certainly has earned a championship opportunity, but this isn't an Aljamain Sterling situation where it's clear she deserves it and no other person does. You can talk me into other fights, and if you told me, Daniel, which pay-per-view would you rather purchase? The pay-per-view I'm buying is Shevchenko versus Andrade.
No, I'm with you on that one. Yeah, to me, it's just, you know, and that's, I think, the problem the UFC faces with Shevchenko, just because she's such a dominant champion, that is one of the fights that are ultimately going to get fans interested, because, you know, whether or not a trilogy fight with Amanda Nunes ever happens, Dana White kind of in the past has really mentioned he's not really interested in that matchup. You know, you mentioned to me when we were texting back and forth earlier this week, and I thought you brought up a really great point about Buckley of, you know, when you're coming off a viral knockout like he had, but then also, like, as I was watching back that fight, I just thought Jordan Wright was extremely tentative, and it kind of makes you wonder about mentally, is the opposing fighter just is their mindset of like, I don't want to be on the bad end of a viral video.
Yeah, I mean, the general thought, we the general like mood of the MMA media heading into this Buckley fight was we had the narrative of whenever you have the highlight reel knockout, it's hard to live up to those expectations. You have that mental obstacle. And upon the result of Buckley Wright and watching Jordan's performance, and Jordan's a really talented guy, and I think he showed more pride to this fight than he did in this one, and I think he's going to have a great career moving forward. But it was like maybe we also should have entertained the narrative that being across the cage from a guy who's coming off that mystical knockout of a lifetime is also pretty damn intimidating, because the last thing you want is to be the next guy on the list of the spinning kung fu jumping tiger kick, right? You don't want to be the next guy on the UFC highlight reel. So when we have these narratives, and these narratives are very true, it's important to know that there are two fighters in the octagon and they each have their own particular obstacle. And Jordan's, I think, was the fact that he was going in there against a guy in Buckley. And for Buckley, I mean, choo-choo, hop aboard the fight train. The hype train where it's leaving the station. I mean, Joaquin was a star on UFC 255. I think anyone who saw that, oh, I mean, you can't not. And hell, even Antonina Shevchenko. I don't want her to get pissed. I mean, the Shevchenko sisters are scary. She looked good against Ariana Lipsky, man, getting that finish. And I thought she looked good. Kaylin Chookagian looked good against Cynthia Calvillo, getting that decision with her boxing. Paul Craig retired. Mauricio Shogunhua, I hope, probably didn't, but the run is over, Jason. The vaunted Shogun run that we've been hyping up is over. And then Tim Means Mike Perry was a good fight. It wasn't great. Mike just made me depressed by how much he missed weight. The only thing that made it okay was the fact that he came out to Beyonce's Halo, even though that wasn't his pick. But, I mean, overall, it was a bit of a lame duck show, but even a lame duck UFC pay-per-view has its moments that you can sink your teeth into.
Going back to Buckley, I was watching his post-fight press conference, and very clear that he doesn't care for James Grouse and his gym, Glory MMA, and kind of the way I took it, you know, Buckley definitely kind of comes off as a guy who likes to go hard in sparring, and I was talking to another fighter just about this in general and said, you know, it's a very boxing mindset of in a boxing gym, you go hardcore every sparring session, where in MMA, that's just not the case. And, you know, we'll see maybe if that fight does happen. Of course, I'm sure there's plenty of Glory MMA fitness fighters that would love to fight Joaquin Buckley. And, you know, it's clear, you know, the UFC believes they might have something in Buckley, and this is a guy that, you know, he's really turned a corner in his career. This is not the, you know, when he was in Bellator, this was not the type of fighter that we saw, and we've seen that sometimes it just, you know, comes later on in their career where they have these progressions. But yeah, it was you know, interesting to kind of see. I mean, I guess they're talking about maybe you know, December, January, getting Buckley back in there. By the way, if people have not checked out that December 19th fight night card the UFC is putting on, man, that's going to be a great fight night card that they are putting together. You know, another UFC note we got to talk about here is Anderson Silva, as you know, came out last week that the UFC, you know, basically was trying to get Anderson Silva to retire. And Dana confirmed on Saturday following UFC 255 that they have released Anderson Silva from his contract. But Daniel is, you know, Anderson Silva clearly still wants to fight, but all these organizations, Bellator, PFL, ONE Championship, are saying, Anderson, we're not interested. You know what the unfortunate thing is, Daniel? It's if you're Anderson, you got to look at this and say, okay, all these promoters don't want me. So you would hope that maybe he would sit there, but man, why do I see Anderson Silva in a bare knuckle boxing ring in the very near future?
Well, I think that has to be the thought on everyone's mind, right? If no one wants me, bare knuckle probably does. I mean, it's because bare knuckles that person at the bar who's always there at 2 o'clock, right, or whatever time bars close, and they're just going, they want to go home with anyone. It's cold outside. Look, that's depressing as hell. One of the greatest fighters of all time can't get booked. Are you kidding me? It makes sense. He's looked sad, but it's like, you know, we joked about Verdum. It's like being the Tom Brady of MMA. Anderson Silva might actually be the Tom Brady of MMA. He's one of them. He's a GOAT. It's like if Tom Brady 2 years from now couldn't get a job in the league. He might not be able to, right? Like the game may have passed him by, but it's still pretty damn crazy. And it's like, not even that. It's like he couldn't even get a league in the CFL or the XFL. And it's like, whoa, damn, we're all mortal. So it's perplexing. Look, I think if Anderson wants to fight, he's going to get a fight. But I think it's probably going to be a bare-knuckle boxing fight for sure. Because the thing is, Anderson's going to want some money. And if there's one promotion that's shown that they're willing to spend money on fights that don't make sense, it's bare-knuckle fighting championship. So I don't know where the hell they're getting the money from. They have it. And I think Anderson's probably going to fight in bare-knuckle. I just hope that he gets put in fights against fighters who aren't very good. Because the last thing I want to see is one of the greatest of all time end his career getting knocked out in a even more brutal sport than mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see that promoters are saying, you know, hey, we're just not interested in him. I'm happy to see that. But it's also, it's like, I forget who it was who tweeted this the other day, and they just said, you know, it's just sad to see what we're seeing with Anderson Silva, a guy that, you know, one time was, you know, the greatest fighter in the world. And now we're seeing this. And, you know, I think it's the unfortunate, sad part of combat sports where, you know, ultimately it is, you know, 90% of the time a fighter just doesn't get to go out on their own terms. I mean, which, by the way, makes me go, so on Saturday night, are you watching Tyson Roy Jones Jr.?
I'm not going to buy it. If I happen to see that thing on some, I'm going to see that thing on Twitter after it happens regardless, but I don't know. Like, I'm not going to pay money for Nate Robinson and, Jake Paul. I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll see Anderson fight Mike Tyson. I mean, who knows? But, I think that's going to be a major talking point on Twitter. People are hyped about that fight because it's so absurd. One thing I'll say is this. I know Anderson Silva has only won one fight in about 8 years. Okay? That's a pretty rough thing to get behind. But his losses are to Adesanya, Cormier, Bisping, Weidman, Uriah Hall, and Jared Cannonier. Maybe we should give our man a chance in Bellator. You know, he's only lost against some top 15 caliber fighters. I know he's 45 and I know he's looked bad, but he has yet to lose to someone who's not like a top 15 middleweight.
But it's very clear Scott Coker's not interested. It's just, well, if you look at what Bellator has been doing over the past couple months, the days of them just going out and, you know, overpaying for any fighter who exits the UFC, those days are over.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much of the promoters saying maybe not, that's a no for me, dog, has to go with them already sniffing around on what it would be financially to bring him in the fold.
Oh, I'm sure that definitely plays part of it. I mean, it's just the question has got to be, I mean, look, you look at Anderson Silva, and, you know, it's just, it's sad to watch. At the end of the day, it is sad to watch to see what we're seeing out of Anderson Silva.
Yeah, it is sad. The performances are sad because you contrast them with the GOAT-level fights. And a big part of his losses are the physical limitations of who he is. So, I get it. And anytime you watch a guy super past his prime and compete, it's sad. I mean, it was sad watching Shogun fight Paul Craig, despite the win streak. So, I don't know. I think it seems like he's gung-ho on retiring. I mean, excuse me, gung-ho on fighting. So I'm sure we'll see him again. I just hope it's safe and he maintains his health, because that's a, you know, it's a very dangerous point to be in your career when you're past your prime still fighting professionally.
The question I really ask is, where is Anderson's family in this?
Yeah, I'm sure. I bet they don't want him to fight, I would think.
You would hope.
But if you would hope, it's one thing to have your family tell you not to fight if you're a preliminary UFC fighter. But if you're the greatest fighter of all time for a point in time, if you were the middleweight champion for a point in time, you don't have a peer in your inner circle. There's not someone that can talk to you. Maybe if you choose, if you are aware of the situation you're in, maybe you can like force it to happen. Maybe if you're LeBron James, that's someone like Maverick Carter or Rich Paul. But when you're a GOAT, you don't necessarily have anyone around you that's like you that you listen to. So even if, you know, his family says something to him, that might just be brushing off his shoulders.
It's unfortunate. It's just sad to kind of see there. But I mean, look, the odds are, and we just know this because we've seen this time after time, there will be a promoter somewhere. I mean, if it's not Bare Knuckle, it's probably Ryzen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I think Ryzen might be the more logical step for him.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens there. But of course, Daniel, we do have a UFC event coming up this weekend, UFC Vegas number 15, of course, headlined by Curtis Blaydes, taking on Derek Lewis. I will tell you, this fight card, before we get in the main event, it's got a couple of fights on here that I'm just like, okay, all right, you got me. Miguel Baeza, Takashi Sato, that should be a banger of a fight. Bill Algea, Spike Carlisle, I don't see how that fight can be boring. So that fight, those are two fights that really stick out to me. You know, but of course, I mean, look, the ultimate reason you're going to tune in on Saturday night is for the main event of Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis, which to me, like, I still don't understand this matchmaking because you know what Curtis Blaydes wants to do. And when we want to watch Derek Lewis fight, like, I don't want to watch Derek Lewis fight against someone who's just going to look to wrestle F him the whole fight.
Yeah, yeah, It feels like we've seen this fight already. It just feels like it because it's the type of matchup that plagues Derek Lewis. The wrestler staying on top of him and getting him tired. But look, I think this fight was being made because these two guys are remarkable heavyweights that are going on great runs, right? Like Blaydes has won four in a row, wins over Volkov and JDS in his last two. Lewis, huge win over Alexei Oleinik in a main event of a fight night coming off of that. And both these guys are priming for a title opportunity. And this main event is pretty good on top. I mean, pretty good in terms of the winner of this fight's in a great, great lane when it comes to getting a heavyweight championship fight. So this fight could be pretty boring. Blaydes can make things boring. Lewis makes things exciting. It'll be interesting to see which one prevails. You got to think Derek's going to be pissed off because it's Thanksgiving and he's not able to dig in to the fixings quite yet. So I think he's got to be pissed off. I'm feeling a little frisky. I think Blaydes is going to win some of these rounds. I think he's going to get on top of Lewis. I think in the third round, Derek Lewis is going to think about Thanksgiving. Think about that spread that's going to be there for Monday morning. And he's going to find the inner beast, and he's going to knock out Curtis Blaydes in the third round. That's my bold prediction. I think after losing rounds one and two, he wins round three.
This is my thing about this fight, and where I think when you talk about the question marks, and I think the question mark you have with Curtis Blaydes is because we saw it, you know, in the Volkov fight, that he was gassed, and Volkov was coming on. I mean, if that's a sixth round fight, Volkov likely wins in the sixth round because you just saw the gas thing. So, you know, I was kind of more thinking along the lines of, if Derek Lewis can survive 15 minutes of a wrestling match, because look, that's what Curtis Blaydes is going to look to make this. I mean, there's no way the team is going to tell Curtis Blaydes, hey, let's have a kickboxing matchup against Derek Lewis. That's not exactly the recipe to win this fight. But my thought is if this fight makes it to the fourth and fifth round, will the cardio be there for Curtis Blaydes? Because we have seen with Derek Lewis where he might get, you know, grappled for, you know, 13 minutes. He still has that death punch left in him.
Yeah, like, it's not like he has cardio. He's still going to hit you hard, though. Derek will get tired as hell, but still knock you out. So it's a weird thing. Like, a lot of times you point towards the guy in Blaydes who will get tired, and you point to the other guy who won't get tired. Derek's going to get tired, but he's still going to hit you really effing hard. So I can certainly see that play out, where four and five, those rounds look kind of sloppy. And Lewis prevails. I mean, for Derek, I think the initial point is going to be pretty damn simple. Don't get finished. Survive. grind. Because even though I see him getting tired, as the fight prolongs, I'm kind of on the same page as you. This is more Derek Lewis's fight to win. I just want to see this guy win. I want to see him get interviewed. I hope Joe Rogan's there. I know I was good to see him back, and I would love to see. There's just an uncanny chemistry between Joe Rogan interviewing Derek Lewis.
Yeah, Rogan will not be there. It's a fight night card.
He won't be there?
No. He only does US based pay per views.
Oh my god. I did not know that was a thing. Wow. He only does US based pay per views?
Yeah. So like in our world now, if there's a pay per view at Fight Island, Joe Rogan does not go to those events.
I know he'd been gone for a while. I did not know he didn't do, I mean, it makes sense that he wouldn't do fight nights, but that's sad. Look, I get it, right? Like, Joe Rogan's probably, behind Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. He's the third richest man in the world now. But, damn, bro. That's sad as hell. Here's a question for you. Is Joe Rogan going to the UFC Hall of Fame?
Well, when you talk about the contributor wing, I don't see how you don't.
I mean, Yeah. The only way he doesn't go in is if he does something to piss off Dana White when he leaves the promotion. But damn, that sucks. Look, Derek Lewis could get interviewed by a mop bucket and it'll be damn entertaining. I just think Joe and Derek have a great chemistry. But I mean, I'm guessing it'll be John Anik in there. And that'll be just as good. Maybe, is it going to be John Anik?
I do not know who's calling the fights. Maybe it'll be old DC. And him and DC have a conversation about, some delicious Thanksgiving food.
I know. I feel bad for, just anyone on the UFC production staff that's working this Saturday. Thank you to whoever is. I know. And hey, if you listen to this and you work on Thursday, you work on Friday. I know I work on Friday, but fortunately I have Thanksgiving off. Thank you. I know it sucks to work on the holiday, and even on a holiday where we may not separate it as normal. Just a big old thank you, because it's a pretty crappy feeling to be working on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I'm thankfully we're closing all of our restaurant properties on Thanksgiving Day. So I guess it'll quote unquote be a day off for me, which really doesn't happen very often. But Curtis Blaydes, he's a guy that he's got a I guess you would probably say not the greatest relationships with the UFC, because primarily because of how much he talks about how he wants to get paid more. But this is also one of those fights that I really wonder if Derek Lewis goes out and knocks out Curtis Blaydes, does the UFC go, you know what, Curtis, you're one of the best heavyweights in the world, but we just don't like your fighting style. See you later.
That would be similar to Ryan Bader / Phil Davis. And I don't think so if he wins, because if he wins, he's literally, he won't move up the rankings because he's already number two. He's literally considered the third best heavyweight in the world, according to the UFC rankings right now. So I feel like if you're in that five to, if you're after five, like, you're expendable. But I just feel like if you're number three and you come in, you beat Derek, I almost feel like you're undeniable, even if your attitude and fight style aren't the greatest from the perspective of the promotion. But I've been way more surprised. We've seen the UFC literally trade away Demetrius Johnson. We've seen Bader leave the organization. Phil Davis leave the organization. Corey Anderson leave the organization. Anderson was a rung below where Blaydes is right now. But I wouldn't be shocked. But at this point, I think the talent level for Blaydes, I think he's undeniable. Again, the only guy above him on the rankings currently, before this fight even takes place, is Ngannou.
Yeah, I saw Ngannou, he's kind of complaining about sitting back and waiting. But, that's the problem that Curtis Blaydes is in, is as long as, he needs Francis Ngannou to lose against Stipe Miocic, because he already has two losses against Francis. If Francis is a heavyweight champion, he's in a really bad spot.
Yeah, he is in a bad spot. And it's not like those fights were close. So I don't know, man. There is a part of me that thinks he may be better off not in the organization, because he's already taken on some of the top challengers and he's shown he can't beat Francis. But yeah, I certainly think he's going to have a Stipe fighter kid on. It's just impossible to sell an Ngannou Blaydes fight with a straight face.
So when you look at the rest of this card, we do want to talk about the rest of this card, is the co-main event's also of kind of, when this fight was announced, I was kind of like, wow, that's kind of a weird fight booking. And that's Anthony Smith versus Devin Clark. Of course, Anthony Smith has lost 3 of his last 4 fights, but all against the top of this 205-pound division, and John Jones, Glover Teixeira, and Alexander Rakic. And then you got Devin Clark on the other side of this one. He is coming off that win against Alonzo Menifee, where came close to getting stopped there at the end of the first round. You know, he's won back-to-back fights now. The other win coming against Daquan Townsend. You look at Devin Clark. The last time Devin Clark won by stoppage, Daniel, he wasn't even in the UFC.
Wow, I'm going back. He won by, and I'm looking at it, and it was via hand injury. This is an RFA 37 in 2016. He won via TKO hand injury. Interesting. I guess he's probably not going to stop Anthony Smith here. I mean, this is a must-win fight if you're Anthony Smith. I mean, Anthony needs to beat Devin Clark, but Devin Clark is being put in a position to rise up because it's pretty simple. Anthony's the vet. Devin's the guy who's been a part of the UFC for literally 5+ years, but he's on the ascent. He's kind of climbing up the light heavyweight mountain. And now he's got Anthony Smith in front of him. I think Smith beats Devin Clark. I love that Clark Menifee fight with his father in the corner. I think this fight just doesn't do it for me. I'm not excited for this co-main event. Honestly, this fight card is not something I'm very excited for. I think the fights you mentioned are pretty good. Spike Carlisle, Bill Algeo in particular. Smith Clark, meh. It's kind of like stuffing. I'll eat it, but I don't love it.
No, I mean, look, as I said, you're coming to this card on Saturday night if you're going to watch it live because of the main event. You know, I'll take it on the other side of the Anthony Smith here. I think this is a UFC, let's try to get Anthony Smith back on track fight.
Yeah, because I think that makes sense. I think when I first looked at this fight, I was thinking for Clark to move up, but I just don't think he's going to be able to do so. And I think the reason why I thought that is because on one hand, we have a guy who's challenged for a title, who's coming off losses. On the other hand, we have a guy who hasn't been at that level, but he's pieced together a couple wins. Usually that's your stereotypical Joe Silva matchup. But when I'm thinking about how this fight's going to play out, I think Anthony's going to get back on the winning track. So I'm kind of picking up where you're throwing down is when this fight does happen, I think this is meant to put Smith back on track.
Then we got a heavyweight matchup, Josh Parisian versus Parker Porter. Had Parker Porter on the last episode of the MMA Report podcast. The interview is also available on the MMA Report YouTube channel and the MMAReport.com. And, of course, this will be Parker's second fight now in the UFC. And, you know, kind of some of my takeaways from the conversation I had with him was, A, the fact of, you know, obviously this is not a short-nosed fight. He's had time to prepare for this fight and how he's walking around at a lighter weight to get ready for this fight. And he mentioned about how, you know, Josh Parisian has been on his radar for some time. And right when Parisian got into the UFC, he kind of figured that this was a fight that was going to be booked with him. Baeza Sato, that should be a fun stand-up fight. And Algeo Carlisle, that should be an action-packed fight. When you look at the prelims, you got Gina Mazzani versus Rachel Ostovich, Norma DeMont versus Ashley Emma Smith, Martin Day versus Anderson Dos Santos, Malcolm Gordon against Sue Majari, Nate Maness versus Luke Sanders, and Kai Kamaka the third taking on Jonathan Pierce. The Kamaka and Pierce fight's another fight that does interest me, as well as originally Jonathan Pierce was supposed to fight Sean Woodson in this spot. But overall, a nice fight night card. I mean, I don't think it's a fight night card that you're going to get. You know, obviously it's nowhere near what the December 19th fight night card is. But, to me, like, if you tell me the three fights you have to watch, obviously the main event's got to be number one just because of where, the impact it has on the UFC heavyweight division. You know, number two, I would go Miguel Baeza versus Kashi Sato. And number three would be Bill Algeo versus Spike Carlisle.
Dude, those are the top three fights, and it's not close. Blades Lewis means the most. It's a legitimately great fight, just because you have two top heavyweights. And then the other two, from an action standpoint, is what gets you excited. I mean, Sato and Baeza have both performed really in exciting fashion, as well as Carlisle Augeo. I mean, Carlisle, the guy walks out and he looks like a star. He looks intriguing, but he looks like a star. So I think you're right. I'm selling myself on the heavyweight contest between Parisian and Porter, more so from the Josh Parisian side. I mean, he looked really good in his second Contender Series fight, earning a UFC contract with the finish there. And I think Parisian's going to be an intriguing heavyweight to keep an eye on. So there's that. And then, you know, anytime Rachel Ostevich fights, you get interested, because I think Rachel Ostevich is clearly a fighter that the UFC thinks they can do something with. She just is a slight dog here against Gina Mazzani. But if Ostevich is able to get a win over Mazzani, which is going to be tough for her, I think that would be great for the UFC, because I think Rachel Ostevich is someone they look at, given that they've given her opportunities on, you know, looking for a fight, etc. That, you know, Ostevich could certainly be a star, but for her, she just needs to get victories under her belt. And that's going to be a tough task against Gina Mazzani.
I'm just looking at the betting odds. I had not looked at the betting odds before. The underdog that I think sticks out to me, you said you got to place one bet on underdog that maybe you feel the best about. Give me Bill Algeo plus 150.
You think he's going to go out there and beat Spike Carlisle straight up? You know, before looking at the odds, were you thinking he would have been the favorite?
Yeah. I would have thought he'd be the favorite.
Mm-hmm. That's a good pick. I think, he's not a dog, but I mean, at minus 140, I like Anthony Smith over Devin Clark for sure. Look, man, at plus 300, I'm riding Derek Lewis. Screw it. I think it's going to be a splendid Thanksgiving for Derek, and he's going to be my dog. I'm going to go in the main event with my underdog pick. I think Lewis gets that third round knockout. That's me calling my shot.
How about you take Anthony Smith by decision plus 325?
Yeah, that's a much sexier way of taking it. That those are good odds. If you think Anthony's going to win, might as well go with that prop bet, because your odds swing in a much... I mean, I think that's a really likely outcome.
Yeah, but, you know, of course, you know, this is the UFC continuing their run. Of course, the month of December action-packed. I mentioned about that December the 19th card, and if people have not looked at that card, of course, that's the card that's going to be headlined by Leon Edwards taking Hamzat Chimaev. Have you seen the betting odds on that fight?
I haven't, Jason. What is it?
Minus 170 for Hamzat Chimaev.
That's insane, dude. That's such disrespect to Leon. Like, I know Hamzat looks like the second coming of Jesus Christ, but Leon's literally like a top three welterweight. That's insane. Like,
you look at the December 19th card, and I say, and I go, who are your top three fights? I'm just going to start labeling some fights that are on this card. So you got Chimaev, Edwards, Jeff Neal, Stephen Thompson, Aldo Vera, Chaos Williams, Michelle Paheya, Marlon Moraes, Rob Font. So out of those fights, like Chaos Williams, Michelle Paheya, I don't know how that fight's not boring. Like that to me is going to be a fight that's just going to be fun to watch. I actually saw the fight card line for that one. That's actually on the prelims. So I think that should tell you something.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at this card now and it is amazing. I mean, we have literally, Stephen Thompson, Jeff Neal, right? I believe that's on that card. Did I get canceled?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a Jeff Neal's awesome. But yeah, I mean, look, Edwards, Chimaev, obviously number one. Moraes Font is number two for me. And then I think you're right that the Michelle Chaos Williams is that one sticks out to you. I mean, Chaos has looked dope in his two performances, and Pereira is insane. So I think that's great. But like the fact that a fighter like Jose Aldo is an afterthought, almost on that main card, is a testament to how intriguing this whole fight card is.
Huge fight for Chito there. That's a fight where Chito can really elevate himself there at 135 pounds. Yeah, when I saw the UFC announce Chaos Williams, Michelle Pereira, I'm like, oh God. Just take my money. Take my money, UFC.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe this fight card's on ESPN Plus.
I know.
Like, when we had this card on ESPN, there's like seven fights that are better than the second best fight on this ESPN card. The quality control in the UFC is somebody's not doing a good job. I'm sorry. Someone's not doing a freaking good job. The fact that this card is not on ESPN is so stupid. Well, I'm pissed off now.
Well, you know what it likely is due to? I would imagine ESPN has a College Bowl game if we actually do have a College Bowl season.
That makes sense somewhat. I still think it's a misuse of resources. I mean, you're probably right. But can you imagine us having a damn bowl season, by the way? Like playing the baked potato bowl for no reason?
Dude,
sorry, I had a sneeze as I was making that joke. Yeah, I can't imagine the baked potato bowl, Jason.
Dude, it's crazy. I mean, it's just like, you know, every week you see how many games are canceled, you know. Go ahead, try to watch a little bit of the FSU game last Saturday afternoon, but of course, we all know what happened there. And of course, Dabo Sweeney, apparently he's smarter than medical personnel, which is I would expect that kind of that comment to come out of Dana White. I would not expect that to come out of a Division I head coach.
No, dude, Dabo's a dumbass. Like Dabo's a great football coach, but dude's a dumbass. Like, I'm sorry. Like, Dabo's a great legend football coach, but he's also one of those guys who's a dumbass. All right, I had to say that three times because Dabo, like, every 6 months has a quote that pisses me off so much. And I just don't know where to channel this anger. But I'm just like, how are you one of the best coaches of all time, really? Well, not of all time. Like, come on. But right now in college football. But then he has all these, like, stupid quotes sometimes. And, like, his COVID quotes are so dumb. Yeah, Dabo, what the hell? You're not a scientist. No one's running away from you. Florida State already knows what's going to happen. They're going to get beat up. All right, I'm sorry, Jason. Y'all are going to lose to Clemson this year.
Look, the only question was whether they were going to cover the 35-point spread. That was the only question with that game. But it's just one of those things of like, it's like, Dabo, you know how college athletics works. FSU is a college town. All those businesses rely on that college economy. And of course, Florida State is not this powerhouse in terms of, you know, resources. So they want to have a game. So they get the television money, they get the ticket revenue. It's just one of those things. I saw his quotes. I'm just like, it's kind of like Henry Hoof. Like, how dumb can you be to post on social media that you're violating COVID protocols?
I know it's dumb. This isn't like First Take. We're not talking about who should win the MVP. We're talking about a worldwide pandemic and we're being stupid. I mean, if there's one time when we shouldn't be stupid, this is the time, Jason. In America, I mean, we've gone full stupid at times throughout this whole deal. I mean, like all I could say is we are not prepared for an alien invasion. Like, when I was 5 years old, I used to think, man, if aliens invade, like, we got them. Like, the world's going to unite. Dude, if aliens invaded, Joe Rogan's high ass is going to be in his podcast being like, those aren't even the real aliens, brother. There's aliens that they don't want us to see. Like, these people, the way their brains work is they always think that there's something else. So no matter what's in front of them, there's something else. There's another perspective. So it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's insane. It's like Joe Rogan couldn't, like Joe Rogan's coronavirus takes throughout the year have been awful. Like, I was just thinking about that in the shower. Like, he was like, you should just take some vitamins and you'll survive it. I'm going to go do comedy shows in Texas. Like, bro, like it's so, it pisses me off, Jason. It really does. Sorry. I have to let my steam out. Because again, here's the thing I understand is I literally am a TV news editor. So unlike other people, my job every day is to watch coronavirus stories single day. Ugh. Every day I'm watching. I killed my grandma because I ate Thanksgiving. My mom, my dad are dead because they got coronavirus. I went to one party and they're all dead. Every day I see this crap. So it's like, sometimes I see on Twitter, I'm just like, oh wait, these people talking about COVID just aren't paying attention. And it makes me so angry. But again, Jason, when I was watching the news yesterday when I was editing, I'm like, all right, we got good news, man. Again, we have three vaccines, right? Mm-hmm. We have AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna. We literally have vaccines that are effective. Hooray. We are on the right track, Jason. They're deploying them in December for high-risk groups. And by April, it should be available to the general public. So it's been a very tough time. But as we talk today, we have something to look forward to.
Yeah, man, it was, you know, we're all living in this world, man. It's, you know, but I will say this here on the positive news. I'm really hoping the NBA allows fans in attendance this year, Dan. You know why?
Why? Why?
The Tampa Bay Raptors, baby.
What the what?
Oh,
yeah. The Raptors are playing in Tampa Bay. Wow.
I will tell you this. I am shocked the Orlando Magic are okay with this. I am shocked.
I know.
Because there is fans allowed in attendance, they're going to lose attendance to the Raptors.
Yeah. I mean, the Magic have been sucking so bad for so long.
Oh, you don't got to tell me, brother. You don't got to tell me. I know.
You're telling me the Toronto Raptors are just going to plop back in there for a year? Oh, my gosh.
Well, if you look at the way the Canada protocols are right now, I mean, you know, they're as of right now, it's just them at least starting the season, you know, in Tampa. But if you look at those protocols, if, you know, because I know I've talked to the fighters who have, you know, live in Canada, they come into the United States, have a fight, but when they go back to Canada, they have to quarantine for 14 days. So, you know, as the Raptors right now, Toronto is just not an option for them.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably going to be a whole year thing. I mean, I think those protocols will probably change towards the summer, but at that point, the NBA season's almost over. So,
yeah, it just, yeah. I mean, as a Tampa resident, I'm just hoping they allow fans in, because if they do, I might feel call up and get some season tickets.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny to get season tickets for the Raptors for a year. But I think if you're a fan of the Tampa Bay area, you deserve good basketball. And you're going to get it with that Toronto Raptors team. I mean, they're not loaded, but they're well coached. And, they've proven how damn good they are over the past 2 years.
Look, I'm just wondering if my Magic made any signings. I feel like they haven't.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think so. I think, you know, they just got to – look, Jonathan Isaac visited the Pope, so there was that. But I mean, that's been the biggest offseason news for them, Orlando Magic, thus far.
Look, when I saw Chris Haynes reported that there was some talks with them trying to work a deal with Russell Westbrook for Aaron Gordon, I was like, okay, sign me up for that. Sign me up. Give me something exciting to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it'll be 500 basketball, but it'll be entertaining basketball. I mean, that's something you can support. But I think my Rockets are staying pat, and I don't mind it. I'd rather keep a guy like James Harden, who is, I don't know, the fifth best player in the league. I'd rather keep him. So, you know, I'm excited we're staying pat with our new addition of Christian Wood.
Dude, that's a great move. I didn't hear about that move until I was listening to Zach Lowe's podcast, and I was like, man, Detroit gave him up. I'm like, wow, that's a great move for the Rockets. But of course, NBA season, man, right around the corner. What the training camp starts like here in another week, and then right before Christmas, game starting up. I'm a big basketball fan, so looking forward to it. Of course, be sure to give us a follow on social media. Daniel's at Daniel Galvan DGG. I am at Jason _ Floyd. Of course, new episodes of the MMA Report podcast come out twice a week. Probably will not be a podcast on Sunday. Maybe not. We'll see. Working on some guests to potentially get on there. So that is going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you always check out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.
On this week's episode of Crush Performance, we take a look at big data and the impact it's having on the games we love. Could there be a massive downside to all of the numbers? We'll discuss it as we take a look at the interesting, the historic, and confusing numbers coming out of Major League Baseball. We'll take a look at international sports as the World Junior Hockey Championships are getting set to kick off in Edmonton, Alberta. We'll take a quick look at the Crush NFL teams to watch this year. Where are they and how are they doing? And we'll give you the results of the Crush Brain Game Audience Poll. The numbers aren't quite what I thought they'd be, but we break it all down. Plus, we have a great offer from our good friends at Exogun for you to check out on this week's episode of Crush Performance.
Crush Performance with Jeff Crochelle can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.